Welcome to Ron Paul and Charles Goyette, the weekly podcast. Another East Ukrainian referendum and another separatist victory. That left the U.S. State Department and other interventionist types sputtering that the vote was illegal. But the toppling of the elected government was also illegal, a point they just preferred to gloss right on over. Meanwhile, some of the most warlike members of the Senate, people like John McCain, Lindsey Graham, Marco Rubio, and 18 others, have sponsored a bill called the Russian Aggression Prevention Act of 2014. It calls for more armaments for Ukraine. It authorizes increased spending on NATO. It demands joint military exercises with Ukraine, Georgia, Moldova, Azerbaijan, Bosnia, Herzegovina, Kosovo, Macedonia, Montenegro, and Serbia. That's a lot of militarism and a lot of military exercises. But perhaps its least noted provision is the most loaded with explosives. It appropriates $10 billion for the U.S. to meddle in the internal political affairs of Russia, in the same way that the government spent $5 billion meddling in the internal affairs of Ukraine and micromanaging a regime change in Kiev. It is packed with dynamite, isn't it, Dr. Paul?
No, you're right, Charles. They never learn. And one thing that they could be tipped off about and get a hint is whenever you see a bill like this, and you know this bill called the Russian Aggression Prevention Act, it follows a rule that I have. If you look at the title of a bill, assume that exactly the opposite is going to happen. So you can learn a whole lot from the title. So if they're calling this Russian Aggression Prevention Act, it means that maybe there's going to be some aggression exerted against somebody else, and it won't be the Russians against us. So this is a shame, but that is a mess. It's been going on for about 10 years. You know, when Victoria Nugent and Jeffrey Pyatt got together, the State Department and the ambassador, they talked about replacing Yanukovych, and they picked that individual, and they pulled off a coup. It's nothing more than that. And yet they've been able to maintain the media presence here in the United States and work very, very hard to convince a lot of people that, well, it's only Putin and it's only the Russians that caused all this problem. But I'm not so sure they're going to get away with this. I think with the internet and other sources of information, you're going to find out that a lot of people are waking up because they're tired of the wars. They're tired of what's going on in the Middle East and Northern Africa and Syria. So hopefully they're going to realize they better ask more questions. And in some ways, these radicals who are advocating, the expansion of our presence there and continue our antagonism toward Russia, the people will see through this. If not, we're going to have more problems on our hand. The people generally saw through the plan to start bombing Syria, and we should look at that as positive. But right now it's up for grabs, and the warmongers in Washington and especially in the Senate see no end to it. And some of these guys that sign on to this are so-called conservatives. I've never understood why conservatives are so liberal with other people, the taxpayers' money, when they want to go to war and stir up trouble. So that is the exception, you know, to their rule of trying to cut down spending. They may take a tough vote and vote against food for the poor and say, well, you know, I'm a real hero and a constitutionalist. At the same time, they never really challenge the military-industrial complex and us getting involved overseas. So it's a problem over there, but it's much to our making, because we've been involved for so long. And now instead of our government waking up and saying, hey, maybe we're going the wrong way, they're wanting to expand it. So we have to stop and take a breath and try to emphasize to the American people that there is another way. And the simple explanation of that other way is, why don't we pay attention to the Constitution? Why don't we pay attention to the advice the founders gave us? And why don't we pay attention to some common sense and quit this meddling in Ukraine? What is it that we can gain by in there? Why are we there? What is its purpose? It certainly isn't national defense, because all this does is cause more problems and, of course, gives us a great financial burden. So I am going to pursue this as long as I can to try to wake up as many people as possible to get everybody to realize that they shouldn't blindly accept, the people in Washington of both parties who seem to think that the only way we can take care of this is expand the conflict, I think we should do the opposite.
Well, it's awfully damning of the so-called intellectuals behind all these foreign policy chessboard operations, and at least for a significant sector of them, I believe, the objective is to assure the global hegemony of the West, but it's having the opposite effect. It's driving Russia out of the Western camp where it could be. It's enhancing the Russia-China bloc. It's driving Putin deeper into China's arms. In fact, Putin heads off to Beijing looking for China's support on the Ukraine crisis later this month, as well as economically innervating the West. So all the grandiose plans of these so-called intellectuals always backfire. When are we going to have enough of them?
You know, and one thing that they seem to refuse to consider, and a point that I frequently make, and why can't they, our side, see it as if somebody did that to us? So here we are, part of NATO. Actually, we are NATO. It's always our money and our troops that have to go fight these fights. And so where's NATO is pointing right up to the border in Georgia. You know, even at this very moment, we're over there messing around in Georgia, and that is right on the border of Russia. And there was a tentative agreement that NATO wouldn't expand and go right up to the borders. And that is what Ukraine is. Ukraine is very controversial in a sense. Is who does it really belong to traditionally? I would like to think it belongs to the Ukrainians, and that we shouldn't have to sort this out. But interfering in election and getting involved in coups and pumping a lot of money in there and sending the CIA, we have to rely on Putin to actually tell the American people that the CIA has been involved in all of this and our secret activities. So it is a policy that if we woke up one day and saw that happening to us, we would all be unified in condemning it. So we should be very cautious in saying that, you know, it's all Russia's fault, because it just isn't so.
Well, some of the early roots of this business of pushing NATO's boundaries to the east dates back to Zbigniew Brzezinski. But of course, he's the one that also gave us the idea of arming the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. And we can see the blowback that we eventually suffered from that.
Boy, that's for sure. You know, this whole idea that radicalizing and using the conflict in Afghanistan to radicalize those who tend to it. And then eventually what do? We end up saying that the billion Muslims throughout the world endorse all this radicalism. But here it is that the CIA actually spent money. Brzezinski advocated it. And they said, well, you know, and he still defends it. He said, well, but it was successful. You know, we bankrupted the Russians and we chased them out. Why doesn't he say, well, maybe what we're doing now is going to bankrupt us and break up our system. And they don't anticipate, they don't understand blowback, they don't understand unintended consequences, and they are obsessed with power, and they're obsessed with this idea that America is an exceptional country and that we have a moral obligation to spread our goodness around the world. And that is so far removed from reality. You know, if a person, an individual, or community is a good community, it will have influence, but it will be by setting an example and other people wanted to emulate us. And yet they believe that goodness and morality and wonderful ideas of liberty should be spread through the barrel of a gun, which is absolutely wrong. And we've gone in the wrong direction because we've listened to that argument for too long.
Dr. Paul, last week in Tuesday's Wall Street Journal, Senator Rubio of Florida came up with the idea of a currency board for the Ukraine currency, saying that Americans must extend to Ukrainians the benefits of having a trustworthy sovereign currency. Well, any country can provide a trustworthy currency if it's willing to do the things that are required to engage in the monetary and fiscal probity that would be demanded. But what he doesn't, well, a couple of things he doesn't answer in his proposal is, first of all, why the American people, we're still struggling under our new normal economic conditions, should be taxed to provide things for the Ukrainians that they're apparently not willing to provide for themselves at their own expense. But the other question, of course, is the natural one, as Senator Rubio looks at using American resources laundered through the IMF to prop up Ukraine's currency at an artificial rate, you have to wonder if he has even bothered to look at the fundamentals of the U.S. dollar.
Well, this is the whole thing. This is a profound theory that, you know, if a third world nation or a very weak economy destroys their currency by believing they can inflate and create prosperity, and they sort of learn that lesson from the United States because we've been able to pretend that has solved some of our problems with it doesn't. But it is a profound idea that a failing currency in one country can be picked up by another currency that is doing exactly the same thing, and when will it all end? Because it works temporarily for a week or two or a year, doesn't mean that you shouldn't challenge the just common sense of it all. If they're printing too much money, how can they come to the United States, who does not have a sound currency in itself, and its benefit is a bit of an illusion because we do have some economic might and some military might, which tends to give some credibility to the currency. But this is just doomed to fail. It is a reflection of a silliness in understanding anything about monetary affairs, but it's also absolutely wrong in the idea of the morality of how in the world can a failure in one country be dumped on, you know, the middle class of another country. You know, it goes back to my old saying about foreign policy and foreign aid. When you want to give foreign aid to another country, the aid usually comes from poor people in our country, and it goes to the rich people in that particular country. So the poor people in the Ukraine aren't going to be benefit. Besides, if you look at what the IMF is talking about, because that's the way most of these funds are transferred, the IMF has a plan. You go, no, we're going to give you $17 billion, and these are the three conditions. Well, the one condition was that they had to settle their argument with the East, and they encouraged this conflict that's going on. But to get the money, they had to raise oil prices, they had to freeze wages, and they had to raise taxes. And that's their solution, and is exactly opposite of what a free society is all about and how you can get an economy going that better. It's all authoritarianism, and it's done by American taxpayers' money. It's done by one world government people is the problem, and it can't work. I don't think anybody should hold their breath and say, well, maybe if we tinker it and alter the interventions and the planning a little bit, it'll work. No, it can't work. It's impossible. And it's doomed to fail, just like I think the dollar is doomed as well, and eventually that will happen.
So Americans are going to borrow money from foreign creditors like Russia, because Russia is a creditor of the U.S. Treasury, and other countries like China, launder it through the IMF to give it to Ukraine, which in turn will give the money to Russian plutocrats through Gazprom, perhaps, or which is owed some $3 billion, or to give the money to multinational banks. And in the meantime, we learn in the news today that somebody named Biden has shown up on the board of directors of a Ukrainian energy company.
Yeah, and some of this is just, for the public, to serve some PR with the public. You know, the Russians have to look tough. The Americans have to look tough. At the same time, there is so much financially going on between the West and the East. I mean, the West has invested $500 billion in Russia, and they've invested $400 billion in the West. And that has to have some significance. So they're always saying, we're going to put on sanctions. But it's usually, something that they can spin PR, and they give everybody warning, and the rich are protected, and the oil investments we have in over there. But the big problem is that doesn't mean that, don't sweat it, that these financial arrangements will prevent any hostilities. No, accidents happen, unintended consequences, false flags, all kinds of things can happen. It can get out of hand. But in one sense, we do a lot of business with them. At the next sense, we want to try to stir up a war. And I put the blame on some of these warmonger types, the neoconservatives who think that they know everything about how to manage the world. And that, of course, is not true.
Well, the fuse is really burning in Ukraine. Dr. Paul, thank you for another great conversation and podcast. It's a topic I'm sure that we'll have to revisit again very, very soon. And thank you for joining us for the weekly podcast, a service of moneyandmarkets.com. I'm Charles Gwynn.